The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at WJE.com.
Welcome to The Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
In February of 2003, the City of London, led by then-Mayor Ken Livingston, implemented a long-discussed plan for charging motor vehicles entering central London during weekdays, with the goal of reducing traffic congestion and pollution levels. It was the largest implementation of a congestion pricing scheme anywhere in the world.
While initially many residents and businesses feared that the congestion charging scheme would impede access and damage central area businesses and perhaps create some inequities, today, 10 years on, it's regarded as an effective and efficient model for urban congestion management, and cities around the world have been using the London experience as a guide for their own policies. Here today to talk about lessons learned in London is Paul Cowperthwaite, who's head of contracted services for Transport for London, the governmental agency responsible for transportation in the London area. Paul, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Hello, pleased to meet you.
First, can you start us out by telling us a little bit about the agency, about Transport for London, and what its responsibilities and services are?
Okay. Transport for London is responsible for planning, delivery and day-to-day operation of the capital's public transport system. Its role is to implement the Mayor's transport strategy and manages services across London for which the Mayor has ultimate responsibility. TfL manages London buses, London Underground, the Docklands Light Railway, London Old Overground and London Tramlink. It also runs River Services, Victoria Coach Station and the Emirates Airline and London Transport Museum. And every day, around 24 million journeys are made on the TfL network. As well as running London's congestion charging scheme, it also manages 580-kilometre network of the main roads across all of London, which includes 6,000 traffic lights. It regulates taxis and private hire vehicles and runs the Barclays Cycle Hire Scheme. It also works to improve road safety and encourage people to make sustainable transport choices.
That's a very broad set of responsibilities. It's clearly a multimodal agency focused on the needs of the region and beyond.
Yes, transport, like you say, we have very wide-ranging responsibilities across a whole host of areas.
So how about the charging system? How does it work? How are the fee levels set? How does the money get collected? What's the logistics of operating the vehicle charging system?
Okay. So the congestion charging scheme is primarily managed by through a use of a camera network that uses automatic number plate recognition technology. There is a series of cameras around the exits, entrances and throughout the zone that read vehicles' number plates when they drive through and around the zone. We then maintain a database where all the records of all the people who have paid or their vehicles are exempt or discounted are, and we match those images against the payment records and details. If we get a match, we then delete the record and we don't worry about it anymore. If we don't get a match, we will send a penalty charge notice out to the registered keeper of the vehicle. We also have an automated payment system where you can sign up with us and then we will send you a monthly bill based on the number of times you've driven in the zone.
Okay, so just so I understand, if the system is reading plates and if you get a match, is that because is it like a subscription system where I would purchase the right to enter the district as much as I wanted for a month at a time, or how would that work?
You can buy a charge on a daily basis. So you can buy a charge just to cover you off for one day. You can buy a monthly charge that covers you for a whole month, or you can buy an annual charge that covers you for a year. We also have this automated billing system called Congestion Charging Autopay, where you register with us, you give us your bank account details, your vehicle number plate details, and then every month we send you a bill for however many times you've driven in and out the zone.
So in that case, I don't even need to think about it. I just know that my plate's going to get read, my account's going to be debited, and if I wanted to watch it, I would look at my bank statement to see that it made sense.
Well, it's very similar to how utility bills, telephone bills, all those sorts of billing processes work.
And what's the fee level on a daily basis?
The charge is £10 for paying on the day. It is £12 if you pay the day after, so you can pay after the event, or it's £9 if you sign up to one of the automated channels, such as congestion charging autopay.
I think it's interesting to understand the level of pricing, the fee level that you've established, £10, which is order magnitude 15 or 16 US dollars, which I think to us sounds like a very large amount of money. But my understanding is that experience with congestion pricing at the corridor level suggests that one really has to charge a substantial fee to get people to give up their automobiles. It's not £1 or $2 or something like that. It's got to be much higher than that. And it seems to have worked quite well in London.
Yes, I think when the congestion charging started, the daily charge was only £5. And we have increased it twice since then, firstly to £8 and now to £10 to recognise increases in inflation, etc. But it has been set at a level which we believe makes people think about their journeys and see if there is an alternative available to them. And London does have lots of alternatives to using the car. In London, actually 85% of people entering the capital already do so by public transport. And the congestion charging scheme was really aimed to try and address the congestion needs and make people think about whether their journey was necessary. Therefore, it was important to set the price at a level that would be reflective of that.
So that fee, that £10 fee, does that allow multiple entries into the priced area for a single day?
Yes, it does. So you can drive in and out as many times as you want. It's just a flat fee for the day.
And can you give us a general description of where the priced area is?
So the priced area, it's mainly all within central London. It covers 19 square kilometres. It includes both business and some residential areas. So it covers across central London, Houses of Parliament, through into the City of London. And so it covers the main areas, but it doesn't stretch across the whole of London. And when you look at it on a map in relation to London, it is a very small area.
It's the really the core, the most dense area of the city, as I understand.
Yes, it's right in the heart of London.
At one point, the area was expanded, I believe, to the west for a while, and then that was changed to go back to what it was the original priced area. Can you give us a sense of what happened then?
Mayor Livingstone at the time decided it would benefit London to expand the scheme into an area what became known as the Western Extension, to deliver the benefits that congestion charging had delivered throughout other areas of London, and that was implemented. However, when our mayors are elected by the public, and Mayor Boris Johnson, when he was elected, he decided to review whether the Western Extension was effective, and he carried out a public consultation which supported the view to remove the Western Extension. The Western Extension was a very different area to the main area in that it was very residential, and there was over 60,000 residents living there, where within the central area there's only about 19,000 residents. So it had a very different makeup to the central area. And that public consultation that included both private individuals and businesses came back and asked the mayor if he would consider removing it.
And when you talk about residential area, what was the particular concern or the particular complaint or dissatisfaction with residents that doesn't exist for people who are going in for business purposes?
I think because residents are, we do offer a discount to residents, so residents don't pay the full price. They actually get a 90% discount. But I think it was just the makeup of the area was very different to the central area, was fewer businesses in the area and, say, more residential. And the nature of the roads and network and things is different to the central area.
Are there other categories of drivers who don't pay or pay a reduced fee, or if I'm driving a green or an electric vehicle, would I be exempt?
Yeah, there are a number of exemptions and discounts. So we exempt a number of vehicles based on their taxation class. That includes emergency service vehicles, buses, those types of vehicles. Secondly, we have a number of discounts available for different groups of vehicles, and that includes people who drive electric vehicles and cleaner, greener vehicles within central London. They receive a 100% discount from the charge. In addition, people who have what's called a blue badge, which is a system that enables people who have disabilities to park in London, they're also able to claim 100% discount from the scheme.
So by using this license plate recognition scheme, the photographically based system, what that means is that entering vehicles don't have to carry a special device. They don't need a transponder, which we see sometimes in toll collection in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, we looked at using transponders and particularly what's known as tag and beacon systems, but decided that the most cost-effective way was to use the AMPL technology. We get very high read rates across all of our cameras, so we know we capture the vast majority of vehicles driving around, and it obviously makes the administration of the scheme that much easier if you're not having to send devices out to people and relying on them to have them in their car.
Does it happen that people bring a motor vehicle across from the continent and then try to drive into central London? How does that work?
We do have foreign vehicles entering the congestion charging zone, and they are able to pay in the same way that any UK resident or UK person can pay. However, we are unable to enforce against them. We do use an agency, but there are a lack of cross-border enforcement powers across the European Union, which means it is difficult to, if someone refuses to pay, it means it is difficult to collect the money from foreign vehicles, although we do have high levels of success in certain countries.
And you had mentioned that initially you wanted to set the price at such a level that, as you said, it actually made people think about whether they wanted to drive or not, or perhaps discourage a certain number of people from driving. And I assume that the ultimate goal is to have fewer cars coming in. But what was underneath that goal? Was it an environmental concern? Was it quality of life for people who are driving in this area? What was the underlying motivation for Mayor Livingston?
The main reason was to reduce congestion in central London.
So the driving was a more pleasant experience for those people who were there?
Yes, to reduce the number of vehicles entering the zone. And there's measures around how congested London's roads are. And so the aim was to reduce the number of vehicles entering London each day. We had around 185,000 cars entering central London each day. And traffic speeds were less than 9 miles per hour.
And is there data tracking the percent drop in how many cars came in or what kind of numbers you're getting now under the system?
Yes, there are. We saw an immediate 15% reduction in the amount of traffic entering the zone as soon as it was implemented. And congestion was reduced by around 30%.
How do you account for a greater reduction in congestion than the mere number of cars?
Yes, so obviously freeing up, the initial things obviously freed up an amount of road space so people were able to drive around quicker.
And did you notice a similar increase in the use of your public transportation offerings?
Yes, we did. We have seen increases in public transport use. When the scheme started, there were around 950 million passenger journeys around the 2002-2003, and there's now 1.2 billion passenger journeys in 2011-12.
Are those annual figures?
Yes.
And I imagine when the scheme was first introduced, an outcry from businesses saying, what are you trying to kill us? People aren't going to want to get to us. Did that take place? What was the response of business interests in the controlled area?
So there was mixed reactions from businesses. There were a number of organizations who felt the congestion charge would benefit businesses because it would improve the speed of deliveries and let people drive around the zone more quickly. There were other businesses who were concerned that it would reduce the number of people visiting their shops or attending other businesses and things. But what we did was we introduced various monitoring measures that a lot of information is available on our website because we did 6 monthly and then annual reports for the first 5 years of the scheme that looked at a number of these benefits and disadvantages and turned out that the impact on businesses was neutral, with the congestion charging causing no significant impact to any of these businesses. The Central London, when the scheme started, the economy in Central London was very buoyant and retail sales actually grew.
And how about the reaction of the general public? Because as I imagine, the city of Chicago, if you introduced something like that, there would be an outcry from people just making their own individual calculation that it would be a cost that they would have to bear that they didn't want to have to think about. Was it a tough sell?
Well, we had a very extensive public information campaign that explained the reasons why we were doing it and explained how the scheme was going to work, which is a very important step that we took so people were fully aware of what was happening and why it was happening. We'd also run various public consultations before implementing the scheme to give people their say. And so we were able to adapt some of the original proposals to introduce additional discounts and things for additional groups of people. One of the things we've always done with the congestion charge is listen to what our customers have said, and that was one of the reasons why we introduced an automatic payment system in 2010, because it was something our customers were asking us to do. Nowadays, of our customers, we actually have an 83% customer satisfaction score, which obviously for that type of service where you're asking people to pay a charge, shows that the public have generally accepted the scheme.
Has the trend in entering vehicles, you described the drop in motor vehicle traffic, increase in transit passengers. Over the decade that you've experienced this system, has that changed? Have people gotten accustomed to the charges and started to drive at a greater frequency?
No, the numbers of vehicles entering the zone has generally remained. There was obviously an initial impact in the first year that saw significant drops, but then year on year we've maintained a decline in the number of vehicles entering the zone.
And as you look at the program as overall from the big picture, what are the key successes? What are the elements of it that you feel most proud of?
Obviously, we were one of the first cities to introduce such a scheme, and it has become a way of life for all Londoners now. So there's very little dissenting voices these days. It's accepted as part of London life, which is obviously what we think is a great success. But it has also, as I said, reduced the number of cars entering the zone, reduced congestion, plus had a benefit in terms of air quality and other environmental benefits, and helped with safety and other matters.
And you mentioned London being early on doing this kind of thing. Have other cities now come to you and said, we want to look at this and find out how you succeeded in implementing it?
We do get regular visits from other cities and requests for information. Next week, I'm talking to a delegation from Norway who are looking at congestion charging. And the week after that, we're talking to a delegation from Hong Kong. So it remains transport providers and mayors and other people from other cities remain very interested in it as a tool and are often coming to see us and ask us questions about the scheme.
Are there other major international cities of the stature of London that you're aware of that are using a similar system right now?
Stockholm introduced a similar system a few years back, and there are other cities in the Far East and Singapore and places like that where they have charging schemes.
Do you know if they're doing a similar kind of a passive camera, license plate reading, auto billing thing that you guys have arrived at?
It's mixed. Different technologies have been used in different areas across the world to really adapt to local needs.
And the money that comes in through this, is it earmarked for any specific purpose? Does it become part of the general revenue for the City of London? How does that work?
So by law, all the money raised by congestion charging must be spent on transport in London. We've raised £1.2 billion since the scheme started, and that has all been allocated across various transport initiatives within London, including improvements to the bus network, improvements to road safety, improvements to cycling within London. So the money has been invested across a whole host of areas.
So at this point, you feel you're getting a strong support from the business community and the residential community for continuing the program?
Yes, there are very few dissenting voices around congestion charging. It is accepted as an everyday part of London now, and people accept the charge needs to be paid, and they recognise the benefits that it delivers.
And you mentioned at one time an expansion to the west that was then withdrawn because it was discovered that the composition of the neighbourhood being more residential didn't make it a good fit. Given the success in the area that it's operating, is there any discussion of doing it elsewhere, or does it seem like that's the right place for it and that's all there is to it?
There are currently no plans to expand the scheme or to introduce congestion charging in other areas of London.
How about other places in the UK?
Other places in the UK have considered it. Both Manchester and Edinburgh have looked at congestion charging schemes, but both decided not to introduce it.
And if a city was to say to you, we understand there was some areas that worked better than others, how would you characterize, in your experience, the kind of area that works best for this kind of a plan, in terms of composition of the buildings and the uses that are there?
I think it was important in, and particularly important there was an alternative for people away from their cars. So the advantage of Central London was it had a very strong public transport network already in place, both through the underground network and through the bus network. So it's very important that any area that is considering a congestion charging scheme does offer a real alternative to the motorist. And I think that's probably the most critical area, is making sure that there is an alternative that people can use if you want to discourage them away from their car.
I think London is a terrifically good example, really role model for other large cities around the world, for just the reason that you described, that public transit system was already a very strong system, gave people good alternatives. But the other thing that I'm aware of that you've done that's been really important in instructing other big cities is you've done well at collecting, analyzing, and published data. So we've all been able to kind of watch the consequences of this program, and we benefited from that evaluation.
Yeah, one of the areas we realized was critical when we set up the congestion charging scheme was to have monitoring data that was available both before the scheme started and then would be available every year after from then onwards. And it's important that you can publish that information and show the impact that the scheme has had.
Was it necessary to close off any roads or reduce the access by road to London in order to be able to set up the cameras and be able to charge everyone who came into the area?
No. I mean, obviously there'll be minor street works when you're erecting cameras and things, but there was no changes to the road network or layout. There was a road network already in place within London, kind of known as the Inner Ring Road, which provided a good boundary, meaning people could drive around the central zone if they didn't want to enter it. But there was no need for any major road network changes. We did fund a number of complementary traffic measures across the London boroughs and things to assist with the introduction of the scheme, but there was no need for any major changes.
Very interesting and an impressive program that's done well and that's taught us all a great lesson. Paul, we really appreciate your giving us your insights into what you've been doing in terms of congestion charging, and we appreciate the time you spent with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.